Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
So with 60 minutes on the clock and one more pit stop for the leading runners, it's Philippe Albuquerque who has the lead in the number 10 Conningham and Ulster Acura by about 2.5 seconds from Harry Tinknell, who's going to take the Mazda number 55 to the end. Three laps down at one stage, that Mazda now right back in the hunt. Well, Montoya's just made a pit stop, so I think Renger van der Zander will nip back in front into third place in the 0-1 Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing. They've been very quick all yesterday and today. Almost looked like their chance had gone when Scott Dixon had a very nasty incident with the right rear, letting go on the speedway, but he got it back. They didn't lose a lap and they're still in there. Ally Cadillac Racing for Cameron Kobayashi in the top five as well. All of the top cars still on the lead lap and still very much in the fight. In LMP2, Gabriel Aubry for Tower Motorsport leads by just on a minute from Paul Loup-Chaton for Era Motorsport. That's the 8 and 18 Orica's, with Chris Meese back in the Dragon Speed car. Another Orica, three laps down in third position. And he's got some laps in hand over Sven Müller, Porsche factory driver. So an Audi factory driver and Porsche factory driver in LMP2s. That tells you about the future for those two manufacturers, doesn't it, with LMDH just around the corner. Cracking battle in GT Le Mans. 11th down over, Jordan Taylor leads by just half a second from BMW Team RLL, the M8 GTE, with Augusto Farfus behind the wheel of the 24 car. That's the black machine. Then Tom Miller in the second, the Corvette's number four, is 6 seconds further back. In another half a minute or so, it is the fourth place car. That's Ricci Competizione for the 62 Ferrari 488, Alessandro Pergidi behind the wheel. In LMP3, Spencer Pigott is doing what Spencer does. He's been in the Riley Motorsports number 74 Ligier for a very long time, and he leads it by three laps from Joao Barbosa, who's driving the wheels off the Sean Creech Motorsport number 33 car, the red, white and blue. Müller Motorsports are in third, but they again are laps down on the leaders. In GT Daytona, this is another really close fight for the top step of the podium and the Rolex watches. Mauro Engel for Wynwood Racing by just on 2 seconds from Raffaele Marchiello, Sun Energy 1 Mercedes. So the two AMG GT3s, 57 and 75 lead. Then it's Andrea Caldarelli for Paul Miller Racing, looking to make it four in a row for Lamborghini and two for that team. They have the number one Lamborghini in third position. They've got about 3.5-4 seconds on Wright Motorsports Porsche in fourth, Jan Halen in the teal blue number 16 car. Then Ross Gunn is the best of the Aston Martins, 20 seconds further back in the number 23 Heart of Racing team. Richard Westbrook entrusted with bringing the TF Sport Aston Martin Vantage home, the number 97 car in sixth position. Shea Adam with more pit stops at the front of the field.
Fuel, tires, and a drink bottle change for Ricky Taylor. Excuse me, for Philippe Albuquerque. This is the second to last stop for the number 10, the Konica Minolta Acura. Further down the pit lane, we have Harry Tinknell in. He is not getting out of that car. Good luck with that if you thought that he would. It's fuel and four new tires and a very valuable windshield off for Harry.
I've noticed how few of those have been used in the last few hours. But what if you, whatever you've got now, you get it out. New set of Michelins, yes please. Clean windscreen, oh definitely. Absolutely right. It's the last tear off, we're going to use it right now. We need to clean the windscreen again. We'll do that by hand. So those two cars, which came in first and second, go out with about the same gap between them. There's 5 seconds between them. They're not off the pit lane speed limiter now. And I would say that actually the Mazda is a couple of seconds further back just by eye and counting in head, which is not always the best thing to do. But
there's a 0-1 just going past going on the inside of number 10 car as it comes out of the
So that's significant, because that 0-1 for Renger van der Zander has already made, Jeremy, the pit stop that those cars have just made. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. The penultimate stop. The number 10, number 55, they were the last two cars on the lead lap to make their penultimate pit stop. But of course, when we come down to the final stops, which would be, you know, well, anytime from about 20 minutes from now, it'll be the number 10 and number 55 that need most likely a little bit less fuel than those other cars. Having said that, you were talking about a little while ago, sort of splitting the length of these stints.
Yeah.
Number 48, 01 in particular, number 60 car went a little bit further. They're trying to do three equal stints to get to the end of this race.
Yeah,
we'll have to see whether that pans out. But the number 01 car is right there now.
Yeah, the 01, the 48 and the 60 all did shorter stints last time around. Renger van der Zander stayed in the 0-1. He only did 18 out of a potential 20-21 stop laps. Kobayashi, 22 laps actually. Kobayashi only did 16 laps and then went back out again in the Ally Cadillac. And Juan Montoya, who'd taken over the number 16 Acura for Mayashank Racing, did 16 laps before he went back out again. So there's a bit of mind games going on, isn't there, really, down there, to see who jumps and who follows who and where you are. And again, Jeremy, we've been talking about this whole race, how the different cars perform slightly differently at different parts of their fuel load and their tyre wear. Well, what you'll want to do now is maximise the parts of those stints where your car is good. So if you're good in the early stages, you might as well do three short stops. If you're good in the late stages, you might as well do the longer stints to get the best out of what your car is giving you.
Look, it certainly paid off the number 01 car. That made its last pit stop a lap 767, so six laps before the number 10. Before the 01 car came in for its stop, it was in third position, 6 seconds behind the leader. It now leads the motor race. Generally speaking, you stay out longer on older tyres, you are going to pick up time over somebody coming out of the pits on fresh tyres, but that only works in kind of the short term. A longer term period, like six laps, by then a fresh set of tyres is fully up to temperature within a lap or two, and then it can gain time on the older tyres.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to see how this is playing out in the final stages. And still, as you say, as Jimmy Johnson looks on, he did a super sim, by the way, last night. This very much came on between not only these three, because Harry Ticknell in the Mazda, he's come out there now fully 5 seconds behind. He was in second, he's now in fourth. So again, it did not pan out that last stint for the number 55 Mazda.
In for their last stop at 52 minutes from second in GT Daytona, Shea Adam.
We've got Raffaele Marcello in for Sun Energy One Mercedes, the number 75 Jan Halen in for Wright Motorsport, and the number 16 Porsche, and Ross Gunn in for the 23 Heart of Racing Aston Martin. Ross will be the first one back into the fast lane because he needs less fuel, having pitted more recently than the two cars in front of him. Now the question is, do they throw tires at it, or do they just do the bare minimum amount of fuel? And does anyone dare take their driver out at this point? I'm not seeing any driver changes, and I'll have to let you know when they cross the pit outline how long everybody sat patiently.
I hesitate to bring this up, Shea, but are we sure that all those leading cars in GT Daytona have fulfilled their drive time commitments on their drivers?
Yes, I did go through that. I made a list and I crossed everybody off. The 75 was good. Habul and Grenier were the two drivers who needed to meet it on that car. For the 23, it was Roman De Angelis and Ian James. Ian drove much of yesterday. Roman drove much of today. Jan Halen drove the start. Trent Hinman finished his drive time earlier this morning. So they are good to go.
57.
For the other two. 57. Our three drivers who needed their drive time were Phil Ellis, Indy Donchie, and Russell Ward. I believe Ellis got his drive time accomplished in that last stint he did before Mauro Engel got in the car.
And as for
the number one machine, that was Corey Lewis and Madison Snow, who needed to get their drive times in. And Corey did well more than 4 hours this morning, well more than 4.5 hours this morning. And Madison Snow has done more than a quarter of the race.
Right, so that is good, because that means we are looking at a fair fight then between those cars, and we wait then to see how long Mauro Engel stays out before making his last pit stop, Jeremy, in GTD. He's been out there 13 laps. Rafael Marciello's made that to be his last stop. He came in a good 10 laps or so before he needed to, but that's that stop out the way. He's dropped the third behind Caldarelli, but he can't go to the end, and neither can Ross Gunn behind him, and certainly neither can Mauro Engel leading the pack. So the dice has been cast there in terms of the guys from Gradient who are running that, and Andres and the rest of the guys have done a very good job. They've cast their die. They're saying, right, we're good to the end from here.
Indeed so, and same with GTLM now, the leaders there pitting for their final stop in this 24-hour race, 49 minutes remaining. Comfortably they can get to the end from here, fresh set of tyres and a full tank of fuel. Away goes the Corvette, ahead significantly of the BMW. It's still in the pit box. Is there a problem?
Shit,
or was
Adam,
it just the fact that it needed less fuel?
Ah, well, yes, good point.
Well, I mean, they made a last stop last time around, but we have seen pretty much all the way through the race, I think, the Corvette going a little bit longer on its fuel since than the BMW, so it needs a little bit less fuel.
The four Corvette had done 14 laps, has done 14 laps, the three had done 20, the BMW had done 13, so make of that what you will.
Yeah, but it's the previous stint, really, that's
a very good point, because you don't know what they were working on with what was left in the tank. Because Jordan Taylor had done a 21-lap stint before the 20-lap, one-lap stint that he's just done, whereas the Milner car had done 31, then 14, and the Farfus car had done 31, then 14. So the three car potentially doing something slightly different on fuel. We've seen this before with Corvette racing. It hasn't always worked, Jeremy, but it looks like from further out, what's happened is the number three car has split the race into three shorter stints.
It does. I agree.
I think that's smart. That's very smart indeed. Johnny Palmer with us in the Hagerty Global broadcast booth. He's the number four car coming in after just 15 laps. We are, what have we got to go, 47 minutes and 20 seconds. I've got that feeling at the moment, Johnny, and you'll know this when I mention it. I'm looking at various timing screens, and I actually, right now, I don't know where to look, because there's things happening literally everywhere on the timing screen and on the track.
Yeah, and you know it's going to be like that to the flag, because I remember watching many a final lap with you at this place, and we literally have to have four pairs of eyes to keep a tabs on four classes. Well, it's not going to quite be five pairs this time, even though that's as many classes as we have, because there are one or two divisions that have settled down like LMP3. But, it's a question of where to look next as far as GTLM is concerned. DPI is just frenetic, and then you've got the extra scope of when cars have come out from the pit lane on completely cold tyres. Jordan Taylor nearly threw the number three car off the road going into the International Horseshoe, and these are the things that are forever going through drivers' minds, even though the end of the race is well and truly in sight now.
Johnny, we've still got around about, well, we've got a full stint of fuel for most people. What is going to live with you to this point? We still might have, of course, the big finale, the grand move. It could still happen. But what will you take out of this race to this point?
There was a moment earlier on this morning which saw the number 10 Konica Minolta Acura up against the 0-1 Cadillac Chip Ganassi car, and it was Alexander Rossi and Kevin Magnussen, two single-seater stalwarts there.
Now, I know
Rossi is more experienced at the wheel of these DPIs than Kevin Magnussen, but Magnussen's taken to this weekend like he's been doing it all his life. And I suppose, you know, through a process of osmosis and his father, he kind of has, in a way. He's been monitoring Jan's progress ever since he was born, and therefore knows this style of racing and has immediately fitted into it. There were two overtakes into the bus stop when Magnussen was going for the lead. One that didn't work, and Rossi could see that happening, so deliberately backed out of it, allowed Magnussen to make his mistake, and then just picked him off on the exit. And then only about five, six laps later, Magnussen had the inside line because of all the grunt that the 0-1 car has had for a lot of this race off turn six, and just got a brilliant move done into the bus stop chicane. It was a classic overtake. And the car control from both and the respect from both is something that I will take from this race and remember for many years.
And that is still, as we say, with 44 minutes to go. What a 7.9 around the track. Thank you to all of our colleagues, wherever they are, trackside, up in London or in Charlotte. It takes a team of people to do this, and many of them are behind the scenes, not in front of the mics or the cameras, but without whom we cannot bring you the coverage. And that includes, by the way, the cooperation of all of the teams in the paddock working under strict COVID protocols in a bio bubble, which has seen people checking in or a minimum of once a day. Even if they are staying in RVs at the track, they've had to go before they can get into the paddock, they've had to go and be checked out, get a QR code. All of the support staff at the Daytona International Speedway, particularly those who make sure that we can be heard there on the FM and on the very effective PA system, Tyler Norling and the rest of his IMSA team as well, who serve many masters over a weekend, and what they do for us on the broadcast side is a tiny proportion of all the hard work that they've been putting in. So thank you very much indeed as we kick off the 2021 IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and indeed IMSA season. I'll say this now, I think everybody is to be complimented for getting this race on at all. 49 cars is a triumph, and let's hope that this is a portent of a season that has started so optimistically. Jeremy Shaw, Kamui Kobayashi chasing down Renger van der Zander. These two know each other very, very well indeed. And in the money laps, all of a sudden, it's the two Cadillacs, Mr. Shaw, that are back in positions one and two.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? I mean, Cadillac just had an amazing history in this race. They've won it for the last 4 years. Acura might have won the manufacturer championship last two, but Cadillac has won this race, and this is the big one, and they're looking to get another one here. But Renger van der Zander against Kamui Kobayashi, last year they were both celebrating at Victory Lane as teammates at Konica Minolta Cadillac Racing. This time drive for two different teams, and they are looking very, very strong at this stage. It's a super battle between these two. I mean, they know each other well, as you say, because they were teammates for the last couple of years, and both of them want another Rolex watch. Only one of them can have it. But Albuquerque, he's only another 4 seconds back in that the Wayne Taylor Racing team, the Konica Minolta team, now running, of course, the Acura. That last stint wasn't very helpful to them, but there's still one more pit stop to go. Also looking, by the way, at LMP2, the leading car, number 8, just made a pit stop. That's Gabriel Obrey. That's the Tower Motorsport by Starworks entry. So that has handed back the advantage to the number 18, the Era Motorsport entry, Paul-Luc Chatin at the wheel of that car. So the two Frenchmen battling away. There's 36 seconds between them, but the number 8 car, as I say, has just pitted. It will still need a splash of fuel before the end. The number 18 car will need a full stop. So it's that's not over yet in LMP2.
No, not
even though the cars are not particularly close together on the racetrack at the moment.
Yes, but that's the essence of endurance racing. You could be racing somebody who is the full length of the track away from you in some respect. Paul Loop Shatland's got about seven or eight laps maybe to go. That's going to take him into the last half an hour. So that will be an interesting stop for Paul Loop Shatland. He's got five or six laps to go, but that will still take him somewhere close to the last half an hour. So
Is fine to get it to the end from there. Yes,
correct, because they do about 38 to 40 minutes, so he may not need full fuel, but neither will Aubrey, because he's only been out, as Jeremy says, for a couple of laps. That could be the battle of the pit crews, you know, and who gets the numbers right. How short, Phil, dare you go if you're looking for track position and the race to the end? And do, the other thing is, because they need a little bit more fuel, do ERA Motorsport bang a set of tyres on it? Aubrey, I don't think, has the time with just the splash to put certainly four tyres on, but do ERA Motorsport say, if we've got a set of tyres, might as well use them, Jeremy? That could be the tactic there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's pretty much a full stint they will leave to the end there. So, yes, it'll be a fresh set of tyres for Gabriel Aubrey and you know, light the blue touch paper.
Yeah, very good. Very good indeed. Shea Adams has been watching the GT Daytona battle, which is still to be resolved. But Mauro Engel just seems, by about 3/4 a lap, to be pulling away from Raffaele Marchiello in second. The two Mercedes AMG GT3s, the 57 and the 75, Shea, have been in battle for a very, very long time.
And trying to do some sleuthing up and down the pit lane as to who took fresh tires. I believe that the 57 Windward Mercedes did not. It was stationary for a minute, or it was on the pit lane for a minute and 10 seconds total. I don't think Wright Motorsport and their Porsche took tires either, and neither did the Aston Martin, the number 23. But there is a question as to whether or not Sun Energy did, and so did Paul Miller. So if we get a caution, that's where the race is.
Okay, that's very interesting. Sad news of a late retirement, but a car that has been troubled. It is now official that the PR1 Matheson Motorsport wins Rain-X car, one of Ben Keating's steeds this weekend. Mikkel Jensen, Scott Huffaker, Nico Lapierre, they all did a great job, but that car will not see the checkered flag. And a warning for the number 97 Aston. Improper attire while refuelling. Shea, you explained that before. That sounds something quite serious. But the reason it's a warning will be fairly specific.
Yeah, when this happens in practice, it usually means that the person either manning the fuel rig or the fire bottle is not wearing their fireproof socks, their Nomex socks. During the race, it typically means that the person involved, i.e. the fire bottle person or the refueler, did not put the visor all the way down, and that is a big no-no with the IMSA.
Yeah, we saw earlier on with Bill Oberlin getting sprayed from an errant fuel hose, how nasty that could be. And if you've ever had petrol, gasoline on any exposed skin, I'll tell you now, it's very unpleasant indeed. The two Corvettes are back together at the second and third positions of GT Le Mans, but Alessandro Pergidi is leading for Risi. That's on the vagaries of their pit stops. That car will need to come in shortly for Pergidi. He's starting his 22nd lap. They've been doing 31 or 32 laps in that Ferrari, so he's probably got 10 more laps before he needs to come in. That's 20 minutes. It'll be a short stop for that car, but he will not be able to get in and out and hold on to the lead. He's only got 10 seconds on Jordan Taylor and Tom Milner, and they've got 8.5 on Augusto Farfus. The two Corvettes still running as a team, Jeremy, as they have been for 95% of the race.
Yeah, but they've just, yeah, I mean, it's absolutely no to tell. They've actually exchanged positions a couple of times in the last two laps. It's number three ahead of number four right now, but as they came across the tri-oval, the number three went past the number four, so this is a super battle between these two. I mean, the orders at Corvette Racing have always been, have they not? You can race each other, yep. Just don't take each other out.
Yeah, absolutely.
We saw that fabulous finish a few years ago. Are we in for the same thing here?
You wouldn't bet against it,
would you? And if there's a caution, maybe that strategy for the Ferrari could work out. It's only about 10 seconds up the road, which is, of course, is not enough to overcome the time that would be taken by a splash and go fuel stop, which we think it probably needs. But, you know, it's fun.
Three more laps for Kamui Kobayashi in second before I think he's got to come into the pit lane. And Renger van der Zander, 3 or 4 for the 0-1, which is scored as the leader at the moment. The battle is still... Who's in, sorry?
The 0-1, he's in, and he's followed in by the 48.
Perfect.
They both are coming down the pit lane now. The 0-1 trundling down further and further and further because his pit box is almost down in the portion of the pit lane that we would affectionately call the lane of shame. It's fuel and tires for Kamui Kobayashi. Wow, that's going to be dangerous. And fuel and tires. At the very least, they're doing the left sides on the Ganassi Cadillac. Are they going to go around and do all four? Yes, they are. So it's 4 tires for each of them. Came in from first and second. That leaves the Acura leading the Mazda out on the racetrack right now.
They're pretty well need, Jeremy, a full fuel load, and they can easily change the tyres in the time that they'll put the fuel in. So that is a no-risk strategy there, and you get a new set of Michelins to take you to the end. They came in the order 0-1 and 48, with Renger leading in Kamui Kobayashi. They will go out in exactly the same order. That will mean that Philippe Albuquerque has come around and retakes the lead of the race. Harry Tinknell, 5.7 seconds in second. He took a bunch of time out the leader last time around, Jeremy.
Yeah, out of the leader, did he?
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he took about a second out of him, you're right. And the number 10 car, I mean, now is hammer time. He needs to go right now. He needs to lay down 2 really quick laps. Hopefully not too much traffic, and that is the only thing that's going to get him back into contention, I think, because he had made up a little bit of ground over the last 2 or 3 laps. It was 4 seconds, it was down to 2. So, and here he comes now. This is Albuquerque making the final stop for the number 10 Konica Minolta Acura.
And that makes sense again because he doesn't want to get caught. That's only the end of his 14th lap. So he will fuel to the end. It will have to be a full tank. But only 2 tyres, Shea, Adam, because they didn't need as much fuel.
Left sides only. They probably had enough time to run around and do the right sides as well. But the 55 Mazda also into the pit lane. This is fuel, tires, and a windshield tear-off. They have 4 Mazda tires, 4 Michelin tires on that Mazda. The car did start to roll ever so slightly with the fuel nozzle attached. That is typical for the Mazda. It's almost as if the little 2-liter engine gets so excited that it's almost about to go again that it just starts to roll of its own accord, and it's visible more on pit lanes that are slanted down. But that definitely was moving. It wasn't the wheels in motion, though.
Johnny Palmer, who would you like to be at the moment in terms of those top teams? The 10 Konica Minolta, the 55 Mazda, Chip Ganassi, or the 48? Who would you be right now?
That is so tough to call.
Well, this is a moment here, Johnny.
Yeah,
it
is.
Here because
well, I'll be the car that's
the
doing their overtaking here.
Well, that's the 0-1. The 0-1 has got around in front of Harry Tinknell, but I think Albuquerque, Johnny, got out ahead of the pair of them and therefore will still be scored as the leader next time around. So effectively what we've got now, and the timing will catch up in a moment, will be van der Zander Albuquerque from Tinknell, I think. That's how it's going to... Albuquerque from van der Zander from Tinknell. I think, Johnny, that's how it's going to play.
Yeah, sounds about right. One thing I did notice is that although the Chip Ganassi Cadillac pitted much, much further down on pit road, it looked like visually that the team turned that 0-1 car around much more quickly than the 48, and there was maybe a second or two gained there. Could that prove pivotal? As now the 0-1 arrives at the bus stop chicane. And this is full qualifying pace now, no doubt about it. We've had a phase, well, a number of phases of the race where they've been happily circulating in the 136, 137s. But with a near enough brand new set of Michelins now to be utilised in this final stint, it is time to really push and see where they end up. But Philippe Albuquerque, so experienced in this race, he's tasted the good and the bad luck in it. A little bit of traffic for him to deal with at the start of this lap, but can do that very quickly indeed into the international horseshoe. And I'll change my mind, not for the first time in this last half an hour, and say I want to be the 10 right now.
Well, you had the numbers in the right order. You had the numbers, rather, just in the wrong order. It's the two binary right. cars then, the 1-0 and the 0-1. Shear, there was no fumbles, I don't think, in the pit stop. Oh, my goodness, the 25 BMW on that transition again, trying to gain a little bit of time. Conor de Filippi's a lap down on the leaders, and he was trying to unlap himself of the two Corvettes. And just misjudged his braking, decided to peel out to the right so as not to run into the back of the third place Corvette. That it was a good move there. I think he might have been battling for position there. Yes, he was. I'll take that back. But he's in the pit lane anyway. It was a false position for that car. 0-1 and 1-0 leading the 1-0-0-1 in second position. Now, where was I going with that? Ah, yes. Shea Adam, I didn't see any fumbles in the pit lane for those last pit stops. So it was down to how much fuel went in. What are the comparative pit stop times then for that last pit stop, which will be the final scheduled pit stop for those DPIs at the front of the field?
From shortest to longest, Philippe Albuquerque had the shortest stop in the Konica Minolta Acura, 1:07. Next shortest was Harry Tinknell in the 55 Mazda, 1:08. Then we find Ranger Van de Zanden in the 0-1 Chip Ganassi Cadillac, 1:15. And Kamui Kobayashi in the 48 Ally Cadillac, 1:18. That's a big discrepancy.
Yeah, that's an odd one, Jeremy.
That goes back to the previous stint.
Yes, of course, because of the fuel. Yeah.
Yeah, number 10 and number 55, they're on exactly the same trajectory. They came in on exactly the same lap, whereas the number 0-1 car on the previous stop was six laps more, and number 48 car an extra lap as well. So that ties in absolutely perfectly, and that is all down to strategy that's played out over the last hour and a half or so. Great stuff. This is fun.
What we've seen, Jeremy, since we went green last time around some hour and 22 minutes ago, is we've seen a lovely mix of really, really impressive, not quite qualifying pace, but push, push, push style of driving, mixed in with a healthy helping of strategy calls coming from the pit lane and as we said before, trying to maximise the places where your car has the advantage.
Yeah, there has been lots of great strategies. It's been a fascinating motor race. It really has, it's been flat out from the word go. I mean, they weren't pushing ultra hard. They were pushing probably 90 or 95% for the majority of the race. Now they're not, but I mean, the lap time is about the same as they've been running pretty much all the way through this race. And it's been just a tremendous contest from start to finish.
LMP2, let's take an update there. It is still 37 seconds between those two, but they both need a final pit stop, 8 and 18. That's interesting. We've got 1-0 and 0-1. We've got 8 and 18 battling together. We've got in GTD 57 and 75. Shea, you can make something of that later. Those two LMP2 cars, Tower Motorsport and Aero Motorsport, both need stops. They will not necessarily be the same length in GT Daytona. I think everybody's fueled to the end now. and therefore that 12 and a half, call it 13 seconds lead between Mauro Engel and Raffaele Marcello. It was over 15-16 seconds not so very long ago, but that is a real gap, as is the gap between second and third, which is Andrea Caldarelli for last year's winners in GTD, the Lamborghini Huracan trio of Paul Miller Racing, quartet of Paul Miller Racing.
John, you know,
go on.
Excuse me. Back to that P2 battle, the number, which is the 18 car for Era Motorsport, that made its stop on lap 766, so five laps ago now. It's going to be certainly going to be a stretch, but I think they can get to the end from there, but definitely not so the number 8 car, which holds an advantage at the moment of 36.9 seconds. I don't think that's going to be quite enough for the Tower Motorsport team, but it's certainly going to be pretty close. And those two they're both flat out from here. The two Frenchmen, Gabriel Aubry drives the leading car right now, number 8, but he definitely needs another pit stop, and I don't think Paul-Luc Chatin in the number 18 car does.
I would say
that's close.
It's close for both, but
it's not close. I don't think it's close.
It's not close for error.
Number 8 car definitely needs to stop.
Yeah,
and I think the 18 is pretty close. I agree. Whoa, that's a huge lockup.
That was a few moments ago from the BMW number 25. It's since come in and had the right side tyres changed on that BMW. Rissi Competizione have to come in shortly. I reckon another couple of laps for it's Alessandro Perghidi. That two, possibly three laps for them. They will take a splash of fuel and come out. Where are they going to come out? Are they going to drop out of contention for a podium position, aren't they? Drop behind the two Corvettes and the BMW. It was a brave effort by Rick Mayer and the rest of the team to do something different, but they really needed a full course yellow, which all of us were hoping not to have, because we want this race to stay green. 57 leading in GT Daytona. Mauro Engel just eases out back to 13 seconds from Raffaele Marcello. It's been a good run from the Winward Racing team in GT Daytona. What a debut in the category for that equipe, Jeremy. And you know, we've seen them in the past put some good runs together in the Michelin Pilot Challenge, now with HTP Racing in Europe under their wing as well. Mauro Engel with the honour of bringing that car home, and that 57 car, the blue and black machine, has looked pretty good throughout the whole race, to be honest.
Oh, it certainly has, yes. Very, very good indeed. And they had one drama, didn't they, when they were involved in an incident at Turn 1 several hours ago.
Wow, yes, that's good.
Seems to recall. But other than that, it's been an absolutely fantastic run for them. I mean, they've got the strategy right. The pit stops have obviously been good. You know, so it's all the things that you talked about at the top of the show.
Johnny Palmer is with Jeremy Shaw and me, John Hindorf, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Last 20 minutes, the LMP2 battle I'm fascinated about, to see how that goes. There's a pit stop for the leader to come, but with just still, Johnny, 10 seconds between the top 10, a fumble, somebody getting it wrong in front of the leading cars, the pressure is massively on the leading Acura now, as it is. We had two Cadillacs not so long ago, but now in the top three different manufacturers, Johnny.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? Considering the Mazda at one point was three laps down from everybody else in DPI, pretty much, and looked well out of it and inched its way steadily back towards the lead lap. Now only 5.7 seconds it is to the race leader Philippe Albuquerque, and Albuquerque came out from that latest round of pit stops with something like a 4 or 5 second lead, and that's being chiselled away by Renger van der Zander. He's got it down to 2.8 seconds now, and to catch Philippe Albuquerque even at those very small steps is really motoring on. 2 seconds now is the gap on lap 794, with Harry Tinknell a further 3.6 adrift. But amazing to have just over 5 seconds separating those three very different DPI cars. I mean, instantly recognisable with the styling cues from the street cars. And Mazda could yet do better than third. Who would have thought it? So the Ferrari number 62 is in. This is the expected stop for Alessandro Pier Guidi, and therefore Jordan Taylor and Tommy Milner will head back into the lead of the race. Yellow Corvette ahead of the silver one of Tommy Milner. Augusto Farfus back up to third position as well, but still frustratingly for the Brazilian, can't quite get close enough to those two Corvettes that remain nose to tail and are not averse to switching places sometimes every other lap, because Corvette permit that kind of thing. And it is the turn of the number three of Jordan Taylor to remain in front. Conor DiFilippi, who is no longer on the lead lap, that was the case before he'd made that mistake as well into the first corner, when he was catching up to the two Corvettes into turn one and immediately pitted after that. Now Alessandro Pier Guidi, having completed his stop for Risi Competizione, will feed back in, and the latest information suggests he's 34 seconds away from the leading Corvette. So he does lose time. That was always part of the plan, and the Ferrari has now served its final stop. We're into the final 20 minutes of the 59th running of the Rolex 24 of Daytona. 1.5 seconds now, John Hindhoff, between Philippe Albuquerque and Renger van der Zander.
You still want to be the 10, or do you want to be the your one? Come on, Johnny. Jump off that fence.
I think I want to be the 55. Let's get Harry involved as well.
Well, I tell you what, he's only 4 seconds back, and he's been turning in some good laps as well. And van der Zander and Albuquerque, this is very interesting. Renger van der Zander was last year a win Taylor Racing driver, Jeremy. Effectively, Philippe Albuquerque is the man that replaced him. Is there a wee bit of needle there? I don't know. But I tell you what, it spices up the story a little bit, doesn't it? Because you know that Renger, if there's one car that he wanted to beat out there today, it was that Acura from his old team.
Yeah, and you know, the number 10 car just put on left side tyres at that pit stop. The gap over the last few laps, it was 6.4 seconds, then it was 5.6, then 4.4, then 4.0, then 3.5, then 3.1, then 1.9, and then 1.4. Now it's less than that. It's closing in next week. Right on the tail, nose to tail now, as they head out of the bus stop into NASCAR 3 and 4.
This is the battle at the head of the motor race. We have been racing for 23 hours and almost 43 minutes. And with a bit of traffic, they're in the tri-oval. Acura, the black and blue car, goes down to turn one. The lighter coloured car with the red fin in second place is the returning Chip Ganassi Racing team, but into the top class with Cadillac. There's an opportunity down the outside here, and van der Zander takes no second invitation. He's on the attack straight away. There was no waiting and gathering himself. The side-by-side out of the International Horseshoe. Side-by-side towards the kink. Van der Zander's going to have to toughen out on the outside and can't do it, as Albuquerque just eased through the kink there. Very clever piece of driving. Basically said to Renger van der Zander, oh yeah, you can put yourself on the outside there, but you're going to end up on the grass if you continue to do that. Turn six, who gets the drive onto the high banks of Daytona? Johnny Palmer, this is absolute quality in the last 16 and a half minutes.
We've been saying all race that the 0-1 has just got phenomenal drive off turn six to give the opportunity potentially for the Cadillac into the bus stop. It's not going to happen on this lap. But this is what K-Mag was finding in exactly the same car earlier on when he was up against the 10, the Acura Konica Minolta car of, at that time, Alexander Rossi. So it all depends on whether Renger van der Zander can get exactly the same sort of rotation out of six to get then that straight line drive up into Speedway Turn 1. But it's obviously very good out of 1 as well. That's what gave Renger the opportunity, albeit around the outside into the International Horseshoe. And he was asking Philippe Albuquerque a massive question. When it came to Turn 4, the left-hand kink on the infield, it forced Albuquerque into an almighty defensive manoeuvre. 3.7, I'll just remind you, is the gap now from the back of Van der Zander to an approaching Harry Ticknell. This is not going well for the leaders in terms of their outright pace. They're slowing each other up through the battle.
It's great to watch. It is great to watch at the western end of the infield. These two cars with what are we going to call that? Three cars lengths between them, that's all it is. And again, a lovely entry by Van der Zander into Turn 6. There's Porsche GT traffic. It's the much delayed number 79 WeatherTech car. Now one of the longer runs on the banking down towards the braking area at the bus stop. On as even, I would say, at this point. Maybe closing under braking again from Van der Zander. Ahead of them, a little more traffic. Gaggle of cars further round that they will catch, that includes the 62 Ricci Competizione car and the Magnus 44 machine. That's a little bit further round the track, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Quicker than both of those two on the last lap was Harry Ticknell in third position. And quicker than Harry Ticknell was Kamui Kobayashi in car number 48.
It can't come down to four cars in the last two or three laps. We're not going to get the distance record. We're predicting 806 laps, which would be eight to go now for the leaders. Johnny Palmer, a little bit of a gap now, so we'll see the relative merits and performance of these two cars at the front of the field.
Yeah, and that's displayed by the two times that were produced by Albuquerque and Van der Zander on that lap in the low 136s again. And I think the traffic that maybe the two leaders had to get through safely. Harry Ticknell caught a bit of that on the previous lap because he's lost 0.7 of a second respectively to the two leaders. But Kobayashi doing about the same speed as Albuquerque and Van der Zander. So I think either way, Ticknell's going to end up with some company here, whether it be the two cars he's catching up ahead, or more likely from the Japanese behind in the Allied Cadillac Racing number 48 machine. So we'll have two for the lead, I reckon, and two to decide the final step on the podium. And this is that scenario, John, where you need eyes absolutely everywhere.
Why do you think I've got you back in the Hagerty Global broadcast booth so we can be watching trackers and what's going on out of the track at the same time? Just before we get another attack by Renger Van der Zander, let's have your questions, points arising and observations, hashtag Michelin PRT. We'll be discussing that afterwards. We may have a grandstand finish here, or we may have more controversy yet, we don't know. And a reminder that on Monday, 1 o'clock Eastern, is our traditional InVision Hagerty show. It's Hagerty Inside Track via Hagerty.com and the live part of their website, 1 o'clock EST and 6 o'clock in the UK, with some of the people making their headlines. To the king again, Johnny Palmer, and it's as close as it has been for the last few laps.
Yeah, not quite overlapping this time, but once more, if Philippe Albuquerque just outbreaks himself very slightly, then Renger's going to be there. But of course, you so rarely get a mistake like that from the Portuguese. And he stays in front, but now he has a decision to make. LMP3 car to get through, and good driving from the prototype driver, the mini prototype driver through turn six. Stayed well out of the way and allowed the leaders to pick their way by, both going to the low side in the end. Again, they're trying to judge the straight line speed of Albuquerque compared to Van der Zander. It's even Stevens. Van der Zander might be able to close a little bit of that margin up under braking. They'll leave the bus stop pretty much together. That's about a six car length gap heading through Speedway Turn 3.
Kobayashi 1.5 seconds behind Harry Ticknell in the battle for the third step on the podium, and that is 4.5 seconds give or take behind the battle on the tri-oval now for the lead of the race, for the Rolex watches for the entry into the record books as the winners of the 59th running of the Rolex 24 at Daytona. 11 minutes to go. They're up on another Porsche this time. It's the Hardpoint EPM car that is going under the sword from the leaders. And the worry now will be at the front of the field, Johnny. Every time Philippe Albuquerque, you'll be listening to his spotter, every time that they say, oh, there's three cars ahead, there's four cars ahead, one or two he can pick off, but it's his worry will be if he gets on a battling group of cars, what that might do to his lap time.
And where on the track they are found as well, because if you find him on the straight, it's not a problem. He was held up a little bit. I noticed that actually the Aston Martin he caught, number 97 at the West Horseshoe, benefited Albuquerque because he was able to skip by and Renger had to bide his time. But then the traffic just took all that away again at turn six. Kamui Kobayashi, can I draw your attention to the Japanese in fourth place, has got the gap down to Harry Ticknell to less than a second now because he was able to lap a full second quicker from the man from the southwest of England. And Ticknell under pressure, but not for the cars ahead of him, but for this final podium spot. Mazda have worked incredibly hard to be in that position, and you get the feeling Ticknell's going to have the elbows out to keep the Ally Cadillac behind.
Still waiting for the pit stop from the leading LMP2 car, Tower Motorsport, by 32 seconds over ERA. ERA Motorsport, 8 from 18, Jordan Taylor and Tom Milner ahead of the BMW by 13 seconds as the Corvette machine rolls on. Farfus in third and Per Guidi in fourth. LMP3, Riley Motorsports from Sean Creech from Milner. At least they're together on the timing screens. They split up by laps, though, as far as their positioning is concerned. And Winward Racing with Mauro Engel, the 57 AMG GT3, now 15 seconds to the good. And Marciello, Raffaele Marciello in the Sun Energy 1 AMG, 7.5 seconds ahead of Caldarelli, who's 8 seconds ahead of Wright Motorsports in fourth position. It's the front of the field that has our attention as Johnny Palmer is watching Philippe Albuquerque on the high banks at turn two again.
Should be all right, I think, into the bus stop this time. Has a sufficient gap. Again, traffic at the Western Horseshoe benefiting the race leader. And the chaser, Renger van der Zander, had to go very wide indeed. Took plenty of curb on the exit of the second horseshoe and just struggled, really, for track position. Had all the grip that he needed, but couldn't apply the throttle as early as Philippe Albuquerque. And the gap's going to extend very slightly in the favour of the race leader. Also, Harry Ticknell has rectified that threat to an extent from Kobayashi. It's gone back to 1.2 seconds. Oh, into the pits. Is that Renger?
Yeah, it's a puncture. It's a puncture.
I thought it was.
Right rear again. Right rear again. That's exactly what happened before. And there is the race right there. Now, was there a touch? What has happened? Or is that just gone? It was Scott Dixon at the wheel when this car had the problem before for Chip Ganassi Racing, and it was the right rear. Jeremy Shaw, it had been awesome up until then in terms of consistency and speed. Chip Ganassi Racing have been robbed of a shot at it right at the very end. What drama! What drama! 7 minutes to go. And a repeat of the issue further round. It's just the one further out the track, just the one. Now, I didn't see a coming together there, but there's consternation at Wayne Taylor Racing. Or do they think, dare they think now, Johnny Palmer, that they've got this race won?
Many down at Konica Minolta is, this is ours to lose now, and we are, what, 5 seconds in front with 6.5 minutes to go. They were expecting full-on pressure all the way to the flag. I don't think they were close enough to have made any contact. They certainly didn't when there was the overlapping into turn four, five, 6 laps ago. And the run to the end of that lap, they were far enough apart to be nowhere risking contact. And then all of a sudden, from a very high shot, I just noticed that the 0-1 car was slowing and coming into the pits, and big lock-up. I thought, OK, that's Renger on the very much on the limit. or is it a rear tyre gone? And that's exactly what it was, a rear right going. Thankfully, he was in a reasonably good place to get into the pits and back out again. But there goes your chance of winning the race. And the Masters Johnny, up to second now.
Yes, and we've got the significant moment share, Adam, in LMP2 as Tower Motorsport pit from the lead.
Which means that the leader is now Era Motorsport. They have at least a 20-second lead. And this is truly a fairy tale with 5.5 minutes to go. Can they hold on?
Jeremy Shaw, what a shame. We were really, really setting up for a grandstand finish with exceptional, quick, consistent laps before that right rear problem intervened for the 0-1 Chip Ganassi racing car.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any contact between those two. Look, I don't recall any other punctures for any other prototype team during this race. One has to wonder, the Ganassi team obviously is new back into prototypes again. Were they just being a little bit too aggressive with the camber settings or the tyre pressures or something like that on that Cadillac? Because that's the only other car that I can recall having any sort of a problem in this race. They've been turning wonderfully consistent, fast lap times each of the last seven laps by Philip Albuquerque in the lead of this race, and therefore Reggie Vanzant then right behind him. We're within 0.2 seconds. That is remarkable when you're working your way through traffic all of the time, constantly. Okay, everybody else in this race at this stage is mindful that the leaders are coming up behind them, but that was remarkable consistency and just a brilliant defensive
Jeremy,
drive from Albuquerque.
Change for second place. Kobayashi's gone through into second place. He was catching Tinknell. He's gone through into second position. Acura Cadillac Mazda now, just when we thought Mazda and Harry Tinknell might have been doing a great job and getting somewhere close. The battle has gone the way of the Allied Cadillac. And down in GT Daytona, Rafael Marciello with 16 seconds. He's not going to make that. Might have to do a little bit of fuel saving because they came in with 52 minutes to go from memory. Johnny Palmer, Kobayashi now is the challenger. But surely Acura and the new relationship with Wayne Taylor Racing, surely they will not be denied at this point. But Kobayashi, don't tell him that.
Well, of course, he was part of the lineup for Wayne Taylor Racing and Konica Minolta in the previous 2 years at this race and took victory with them. So, in a sense, he's got a bit of a score to settle with the number 10 car, who are the 10 car and crew are on course for a hat trick. But there are no common drivers in this year's 10 lineup. Remember, it's entirely different. But Kamui Kobayashi, 6 seconds he's got to try and find in 3 minutes. It's a big stretch, and he's still got the hassle of Harry Tinknell behind as well. Harry's only 3 and a bit tenths adrift in that Mazda, so let's see whether he can offer a response. Getting very, very close indeed under braking as they head through turns 1 and 2.
So now what do you do? What do you say to Philippe Albuquerque? 5 seconds with a couple of laps remaining, and I have been reminded by a couple of people that the Mustang sampling car got a puncture as well on the right rear down towards turn one. Just watching a replay there of Kobayashi going over the top of Harry Tinknell and claiming second position. 4.7 seconds. Two laps from here, Jeremy?
Probably so. I mean, you're just remarkable what Wayne Taylor Racing has done here. I mean, what a battle between these two, between those two great teams, between Chip Ganassi Racing. They've won this race overall 6 times. Wayne Taylor has run it twice as a driver. And 4 times as a team owner. It's been a remarkable effort by this team. Brand new switch to the Acura chassis for this season, and it's very, very close now.
And the white flag, in fact, is out. 3.5 miles to go. What a day this could be for the win, for the Taylor family, with their team, with one of their sons leading overall, and Jordan Taylor bringing the Corvette home to a famous victory in the GT Le Mans category. It's back up to 5 seconds. Harry Tinknell has not given up second place, by the way. Juan Montoya's 46 seconds further back in third, but could be picking his way through carbon fibre to a second place, depending on what goes on. The last lap has started. Where's the battle for second position? Just coming onto the infield now as the leader heads onto the high banks for the 807th and final time. Considering the amount of full course yellow that we've had, to be well over 800 laps, 833 is the distance record. Just shows you the pace that has been set when we have been green. And the last half a lap now. What noises is Philippe Albuquerque hearing in that car? Ricky Taylor, Alexander Rossi and Helio Castro Neves have done their parts, but it's the Portuguese driver who's been given the honour to bring it home, and they've had to scrap for it. This wasn't given, but 2021 IMSA gets underway, and the 59th running of the Rolex 24 Hours is won by the Conningham and Alta Acura. Kobayashi comes home second. Mazda from three laps down in third position. In LMP2, they're still battling, but there's 20 seconds between them. It will be 1-2 in Corvette for Wayne Taylor, for Jordan Taylor and Tommy Milner in the 3 and 4 car. Mauro Engel and Winward Racing win GTD. He takes the checkered flag from second. Sun Energy 1. What a great start to their partnership with Gradient Racing. Phenomenal finish. Drama. In Mazda's storybook, Jeremy, drama from the formation lap right to the end. They couldn't get first gear and they lost second with a couple of laps to go. But what a race! What a race! Here are the Corvettes. It's the bright red Corvette, Jordan Taylor, coming through in the number three car. He's only got the high banks to go. The red number one illuminated on the side of the door to tell him he's leading GT Le Mans. He knows that. The fans know that. And Corvette Racing continue their story at the Rolex 24. They took their 100th race in IMSA North American competition here on the 4th of July in the short race last year. And they move and chalk up another W. First and second. Copybook stuff. Everyone has taken the checkered flag now. Jeremy Shaw, what a race in all five classes. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely tremendous. Hats off there to Philip Albuquerque. That's exactly why Wayne Taylor hired him to join this team for this year. He's been driving super successfully with the Action Express team in Cadillacs for the last few years. But Albuquerque is also, you know, was a champion last year in Europe. And that was a great drive. That was a great performance by the entire team, of course. But he was the guy who was entrusted with the final stages of this race, and he did exactly what was asked of him. Fantastic motor race.
Johnny Palmer, three in a row with a manufacturer change in between for Wayne Taylor Racing. What a reputation they have here, and they add to their history. But three different manufacturers in the top three at the head of the field.
What's happened to the number three Corvette after the line? It's ended up sideways at turn one, it would appear. But yeah,
did cross great the line, though. Form.
Yeah, it did cross the line, take the win, thankfully. Of the last 5 years of this race, Wayne Taylor Racing have won four of them. Three with the Cadillac DPI and now with the brand new car. And they seem to have missed absolutely nothing in that transition between one DPI to the other. All the strategies gone with them, all that experience, a new driver lineup as well, remember, for 2021. But it doesn't seem to have mattered because they have battled and scrapped throughout all of that. There were so many little private battles that I'll probably need the next couple of days to really interrogate over the hours. But Philippe Albuquerque pulled in for that closing stint, but I remember, you know, the times when Rossi was at the wheel, Elio Castroneves worked incredibly hard, and of course Ricky Taylor, the other son of Wayne, all playing their part to get yet another victory for car number 10.
And Jeremy Shaw, what a start the relationship between Wayne Taylor Racing and Acura. When we did our preview, what seems a million years ago in some respect, we talked about how well Penske and that organisation had done. They won championship here in IMSA with Acura, but they didn't get the big win in the endurance race. And first time out of the box with Wayne Taylor Racing, arguably the biggest IMSA race, the Rolex 24, and Acura win it with Wayne Taylor. Extraordinary stuff.
Absolutely, and yeah, they struggled last season. I mean, the Acuras were basically last at the end of the race last year. They had some niggly problems during the race. Really no problems at all for number 10 today. It's a real team performance, and what a day for the Taylor family. You know, both Jordan wins the GTLM, Ricky wins overall, Dad's, you know, over the moon. Incredible performance. But yeah, hats off here to Acura, because yeah, they've had problems in this race in the last few years. This was the one they wanted, and this is the one they have got.
GT Le Mans, the other pro class, Johnny, I said part of the way through the race that I like the way the Corvettes were running this race. It seemed to me they had something in hand, and certainly when the BMW got ahead, it almost seemed like the edict came from the pit box. Right, okay, it's go time now, guys, and off they went. The pass for the lead was extraordinary coming out of turns two and three, and then they re-established themselves in P1 and 2 and basically drove away from that point.
They did, and I didn't necessarily expect the latter stage dominance from those two cars. They struggled with what was a brand new car 12 months ago, of course, came home with a fourth place finish, but I've just been impressed with how consistent both of those cars have been. They've been happy to run at such close quarters, overtaking one another if the moment took them, and maybe they felt that one car was slightly quicker than the other at any phase in the race. They're comfortable to do that. They've been playing that sort of game at Corvette for years and years with the older cars, and they're using the momentum of what's been a brilliant year in 2020 to then carry that on into the biggest race of the next year, and a 1-2 finish is easily a deserved reward for that dominance.
Pretty decent race as well, Jeremy. In GTD, we sort of expect that. The excitement at the front of the field meant that, you know, we possibly didn't see quite as much of that. And talk about, we're trying to keep across all of the five classes. But in the end, sort of under 30 seconds for the top three, two Mercedes and the Lamborghini. Paul Miller Racing on the podium again, not repeating from last year. But what a start to their respective partnerships for Wynwood Racing, who in GT3 for the first time here in IMSA with the win, and Sun Energy One with Gradient in second position, kept them honest all the way through.
Yeah, you know, what a great day for Mercedes. I mean, they've shown well here in the past. It's always been competitive in GTD, but to come away with a 1-2 finish, wow, that's a big day for Mercedes. And for that Wynwood Racing team, look, they've got a good long relationship they've had now the last three or four years with Mercedes in GT4, but to step up into GT3, GTD for the very first time and come away with a win like that, wow, my hat's off to them. A really, really fine performance by all of those drivers.
First time for LMP3. Johnny, you talk about these cars a lot as our voice of the European Le Mans series. Riley Motorsport, well, there's a name, of course, that is synonymous with success here in IMSA, taking on the running of the GSP 320 Ligier. They come home ahead of Sean Creech Motorsport and the Duquesne, formerly known as Norma, in third position for the pole sitting Mulder Motorsports. Gaps between those, but I think should be mentioned with honour in their first major 24-hour outing, certainly here in the IMSA competition. I know that they've done things like Thunderhill 25 and Silverstone 24 before, but first time at this level.
Yeah, and of the seven starters, I make it six got to the line. They completed the 24 hours. Now, there may have been one or two hiccups along the line, but there were questions ahead of the race as to whether the little baby prototype would be able to do the distance, being relatively inexperienced in 24-hour races. But four of them in that bank between 18th and 21st overall. Three laps the winning margin in the end for Riley Motorsports, and it was Spencer Pigot who brought the car across the line, winning with Oliver Askew, Scott Andrews and Gar Robinson. But I've been mightily impressed, and it was fascinating to hear the thoughts of João Barbosa comparing one of the Ligier GSP3s with the DPI, no less. And yeah, funnily enough, there is a little bit of common ground. It's a small patch of common ground, but it does exist, and they're far less power, a lot less downforce as well, but you still have to hustle them to get good lap times. And brilliant that category has attracted such big names as the Portuguese down at Sean Creech Motorsport. They've just missed out on the victory, but nevertheless get second.
Jeremy, LMP2, sixth overall for ERA. Good battle with Tower Motorsport. They did different things on the strategy. We like to see that strong entry, some attrition there in LMP2, but I think that was just kind of underlining how competitive LMP2 is, and I like to see those LMP2 cars there. As 19 seconds at the end, you'd take that in any class, to be honest.
Yes, absolutely. Really fine effort by ERA Motorsport here. This was they won this race, in my opinion, at the restart on lap. Was it their 723rd lap? It was the final restart, I think. It was the final restart of the race. They came into the pits as we went green, and took on a splash of fual at that same time. Equally crucially, the number eight car was called for a penalty for overtaking too soon, basically, before at the restart. That's when the race was won, right there and then.
Shit, Adam, with our VP Racing Pit and Paddock Report, who have you got for a shit?
Oliver Askew, Rolex winner. How good does that sound to start out your 2021?
Oh, it sounds unbelievable. I'm at a loss for words, honestly. I am extremely tired, but extremely happy for this opportunity to be here. I'm taking a selfie with John Doonan right now, who's a longtime friend of mine, and we've always spoke about racing in this paddock. So, just fantastic job by everyone at Riley Motorsports. I'd like to thank Gar Robinson and the Robinson family for the opportunity, giving me the opportunity to be here. Fantastic job by everyone. My teammates, Spencer Pigot, Gar Robinson, Scott Andrews, everyone on the team, this is a huge team effort.
In terms of the number 74 LMP3 machine, you guys led for most of this race. Was that more nerve-wracking than having to fight your way through?
It definitely is. Definitely is, especially when we're a couple laps ahead of the field and we're just trying to take care of the car. You know, any little noise that doesn't seem normal, you start to think a little bit too much about what might happen. So glad it wasn't longer than 24 hours, I'll say that.
Said earlier when you were talking to John, Johnny and Jeremy that your focus is still trying to get back to IndyCar this year, but you have a 100% winning record in the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona. Any chance we might keep you over here for sports cars?
Yeah, we'll see. Like I said before, I hope to come back for the rest of the endurance races this year, and definitely for another Daytona 24 next year as well.
Oliver, it's high enough again. Well done. You deserved that. I'm going to say what I said to
Thank you
so
much.
Before. I'm going to say what I said to you before. It's not always like this. You know that. You know how cruel motor racing could be. But go and enjoy. Congrats to you and the team. Sparkling performance, young man. Let's hope you can continue that throughout the rest of the Michelin Endurance Cup season. Well done.
I'm going to remember this one for a long time. And I have a watch to remember it now as well. So thank you guys so much. Thanks to the listeners, and hope you guys enjoyed the show.
Oh, we did. Take plenty of selfies. Oliver Askew out of the Riley winning LMP3. What a story that is, Jeremy Shaw. First time in the endurance race, first time racing at night. Hadn't driven the P3 car very much as well. And I'm not being the little black rain cloud, but he knows, because he's been in motor racing for a while, it's not always going to be a day like this. But what a way to start.
Look, he's a special talent, that boy. First time I saw him drive, I think it was probably actually at the Formula Ford Festival. He'd not really done many car races before that. He'd really only done a handful, and he was in contention to win that. The following weekend at Silverstone, he finished second in the until he got a puncture, which was not his fault. He was going for the lead. But in the Walter Hayes Trophy the following week, wet race, hadn't driven at Silverstone in the wet, finished second in the final to the guy who'd won everything for the last several years. He's a special talent. He's shown it all the way through the road to Indy. He showed it for me last year in IndyCars as well. It's IndyCars lost, and right now it's sports cars gain. But Oliver Askew definitely has a huge future ahead of him.
More than just MEC, Michelin Endurance Cup, Jeremy. I mean, he's learned very quickly. As the Americans would say, he's a quick study. He's a fast learner. As well as a fast driver. It does take a difference in attitude. It does take a difference in preparation and mental fortitude to race for that amount of time with other people in the car, with other classes around you. And he's come out of this, I think, looking very good indeed.
Yeah, no question about it. But yeah, hats off also to Gar Robertson. Did a super job in that car as well.
Yes.
As of course did Scott Andrews and Spencer Pigot, who brought it home. I mean, the pressure on Spencer there. I noticed in the latter stages there he was being overtaken by the overall race leader, and he kept well out of the way. I'm thrilled for all of those guys, because they're all really, really good guys. The youngsters all worked super hard. You know, the Scott Andrews, remarkably the oldest driver in that driver lineup at 30 years of age, from Australia originally. I'm thrilled for all of them, because they're just really good guys who work super hard to create opportunities for themselves. And a huge thanks to Gar Robinson for giving that to them to drive with this Riley Motorsports team.
And Riley Motorsports, we've been waxing lyrical, rightly so, about the team that won overall, Jeremy, because, you know, Wayne Taylor Racing, fantastic stuff from them, having changed manufacturer. But Riley just win. Doesn't matter what the car is, what the category is, Bill Riley is a winning machine, just like Wayne Taylor Racing.
Yeah, he's a chip off the old block. His dad, Bob, just a lovely guy, and super clever. You know, so always in the background. He never wants the limelight, but he gets the limelight because his cars win races, and Bill Riley's team wins races, and they've done it again here. First time out running a P3 car, at least on level, and they come away with a win. It was a perfectly orchestrated win. They came into the race with a plan to run. We talked about early on the fact that the LMP3 cars had to make one mandatory stop to change the brakes. They were allowed 8 minutes to do that. But the Riley team, they realised they needed to do more than that. So they made two brake changes on schedule. Everything was planned out before and everything was organised. And they just executed absolutely perfectly.
Well, as you can hear in the background, the formalities are starting in the victory lane. A very great thanks. Stay with us, by the way, on RS2. We've got Michelin Post Race Tech, and your questions are flooding in. So more analysis from Jeremy Shea, Johnny and myself in the next few minutes. Thank you to our colleagues at NASCAR Productions up in Charlotte, who have made sure we've seen all of the action. It's been a brilliant race. Tim Gray and his team in London kept us on the air around the world. All our camera operators and technical staff on the TV side and the broadcast side, the radio broadcast side, my co-commentators, of course, and indeed the responsible adult, Eve Hewitt, and our commercial partners. It's Michelin Post Race Tech next. That one will live long in the memory. The 59th Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona 2021 IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship off and rolling with a bit of a bang.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.